Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to SylviaGlobal.com. I'm your host, Gail Sylvia, and I'm so excited that we are in Dublin, Ireland today, meeting with Niamh Gallagher. Niamh Gallagher is the co-founder, along with Michelle O'Donnell Keating, of Women for Election. Before creating and being the founder of Women for Election, Niamh worked as a research and policy analyst at the Children's Rights Alliance in Dublin, where she was the lead researcher and author on the Alliance's annual report card to government, its flagship publication. Niamh represented the Alliance at Social Partnership on the End Child Poverty Coalition and at EuroChild. Niamh, good evening, your time, correct?
Good evening. Yes, we are at 5:30 p.m. here in Dublin, rainy Dublin.
Rainy Dublin. I think, isn't the rain a part of what makes it so beautiful there? It's such a beautiful country.
I suppose it is, but you don't really feel like that when you're cycling into work getting soaked.
Thank you for being our guest today here on Sylvia Global. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Gail.
You know, my understanding is that Women for Election is a nonpartisan organization and that the vision is for an Ireland that has balanced participation of women and men in political life. Can you elaborate on Women in Election and why it was founded?
Of course. I suppose Women for Election, as you said, is a nonpartisan organization whose vision is of an Ireland with balanced participation of women and men in political life. And at the moment in Ireland, we have very far from balanced participation. In fact, we have 15% of our elected representatives at national level are women. And that is the highest number of women that we have ever had elected nationally. So since the foundation of our state, we have always been governed by 85% men at a minimum. So we have a really serious problem. And even below that, at local level, so we have city councils, county councils and town councils, which govern locally. The percentage of women elected at that level is just 16%. So it's really not much better. And in terms of the change, so whether this is changing over time, we've only seen a 5% increase in women's political representation over 35 years. So we are really dealing with an issue that has been around for a long time and that doesn't seem to be being solved by ordinary methods or natural methods, because in that period we have seen the number of women in the workplace increase, we've seen the number of women in the professions, in law, in medicine, in engineering, increase massively, and yet politics has stayed at this dismal 15% level. So Women for Election exists to solve that problem. And part of our research was going around the country and speaking to women that we met in women's groups, in political parties and across the board, and talking to them about this problem and what they saw as the problem. And so many of them said, I really would love to get involved in politics. I'm so interested in politics. I'm motivated to put myself forward, but I'm not sure what to do next, or I'm not sure what kind of skills I really need and whether I have those skills. So Women for Election is designed to inspire and equip women to succeed in politics by supporting women here in Ireland in developing and building those very necessary skills around communications, campaigns and confidence to get themselves forward to the next stage and consider putting themselves on the ticket.
When there are 15% women in elected office, how does that compare to the percentage of women who vote?
I think voting is not an issue. We would have, in terms of our turnout, we would have sort of roughly 70% turnout at election time at national general elections and slightly less at local and European level. But there doesn't seem to be a huge difference in terms of gender, in terms of those turning out to vote. And interestingly, in our last general election, we had 15% of women ran for elected office and 15% were elected. So it doesn't mean that every woman was elected, but of the percentage of those that were elected, it was 15%. And what that what it showed when the analysis was done after the poll was that men and women showed no gender bias in their voting behaviour. So sometimes people say, oh, well, people aren't as inclined to vote for women as they are for men because traditionally we associate politics with men in this country and so on. But actually, this election proved in 2011 that voters don't see it that way. In fact, voters are as likely to vote for a woman as a man when they see a woman on the ballot paper. The problem is that there are so few women on the ballot paper. In fact, of 566 candidates in our general election, we had just 86 women.
What are the backgrounds of those women in general that do run?
Well, I suppose we have we are a small country. Our population is 4.5 million in the 26 counties of the south of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. And traditionally, many of the women who have run for office in Ireland come from a family background in politics. So we would have many women running for office whose fathers may have been elected representatives or whose brothers or who come from that kind of background. What's positive is that we're seeing a shift. So we are seeing more women declaring themselves for office who don't come from that background. Many of them would be educated women. A high proportion come from a teaching profession. Sometimes people say that's because teachers have more time because they get the summer off, they finish earlier in the afternoon, so they can engage in party politics and all the extra work required with running for office before you get elected. We would also have a number of women who have come up a community activism route, so who would be active at local level in their communities, bringing about change, whether that is through a women's group, through a residents association, a Tidy Towns committee, various different organisations like that, who have, I suppose, realised that to bring about the level of change that they envisage for their community, the best route through which to do that is actually elected politics rather than activism on the ground.
So the history of the female candidates who have ran have been largely supported by or come from backgrounds with fathers who have been in the political arena. Are there any indications that there are also economic, do they tend to come from wealthier families versus non-wealthy families? But you did make reference to teachers, so I don't know if, you know, how that might fall into the question, but can you clarify that for us? Let me repeat it.
Sure, and okay. I suppose I should have said our system is very different to the system in the US in terms of funding for elections and political parties. Running for election is not as expensive a pursuit as it is in the US. So we don't have a situation where only the very rich can afford to put themselves forward. In fact, there's legislation currently going through our parliament to reduce the level of donations that candidates can receive even further. So at present, I think the maximum donation that a candidate can receive is something like €650 from an individual. Candidates tend to run things like local fundraisers, pub quizzes, race nights to raise funds for their campaign, and they would rely heavily on local volunteers to drop their leaflets. They would also be supported by their political parties, who would fund some of their posters or some of their election material. But they're really, whilst there is a cost to running for election, and for women that cost is a barrier because women wouldn't have access to the same kind of networks traditionally as men do in terms of fundraising through business or sport, but the cost is not equivalent to what may be experienced in the US. So we don't have just the very rich putting themselves forward.
So do you find that there is in fact a level playing field when it comes to being able to cast our hats into the ring as women?
I wouldn't go so far as to say a level playing field, because you do still need to have access to cash. And the bigger your election, the more cash you need. So a local election you could probably do on a reasonably low budget, but running for national parliament obviously requires more money, more capacity, greater networks. So I do think there is a bias in favour of those who can raise that kind of money. But I suppose I just don't feel that the bar is as high as it may be in the US. I suppose one of the things that we talk about here in terms of women's access to politics and some of the barriers that women experience, they're summarised quite neatly as the five C's. So that's cash, culture, childcare, candidate selection and confidence. And cash always comes up in the top three, because women do say that, especially if they have taken time out of their careers to mind children, or if they haven't been in the workplace for a number of years, accessing the networks that you need to raise funds is more difficult.
Talk about the culture.
So the culture is fascinating, I think, to people, especially if they're not familiar with the Irish political culture, because, as I said, we're a small country. We have 166 national level representatives, of whom 25 are women in our national parliament, our first house. And we then have a second house, the Senate, which has 60 representatives, which are either elected or appointed. And that has 15 women. So that has more women at 30%. And those two houses of parliament, I suppose, are a little cocoon of Irish politics, but that is where the culture happens, I suppose, and not only there, but out in the constituencies. And the culture is said to be very male dominated for a number of reasons. One is the time at which things happen. So our national parliament sits for the middle 3 days of the week until 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and even later. For the representatives that come from rural areas, they have to leave their home on a Monday evening or Tuesday morning, and they don't get back until very late on Thursday night or Friday. So for a woman with a family, in our country at least, that's a real challenge for her. The times that meetings happen in constituencies are invariably late at night. So you would have a meeting perhaps between 8 and 10. That meeting would often be held in a pub. So for many women, they find it quite uncomfortable to have to go to a pub at that time of the evening to host a political meeting. It's just not, particularly in rural areas, what women are inclined to do. But that's the culture of Irish politics, and that's how it's always worked. So part of the challenge for Women for Election is mobilising more women to get into politics, so we change how it's done, so that we can start to challenge those hours, we can start to challenge how meetings happen. We've spoken to some women who are now successfully elected, who one in particular tells a story of the first time she went down to her local party branch in a rural constituency in Ireland. And she went to the meeting, which was scheduled for a Thursday evening. She showed up to the pub. She was the only woman present. And the men were fascinated by who was this woman coming along. This is very unusual. And they said, look, aren't you great to come along? And yeah, and you're interested in politics and good for you. Well, I'll tell you what, the women meet on a Friday morning and they do their chat then, and they have their tea and sandwiches. And you could go to that meeting if you like. Those people don't get elected. Those people aren't running. They're the helpers. And that's very much, you know, the way things were in that community. So it's really, there's some very, very big obstacles for women in this country, and especially in rural Ireland.
Where does your support come from?
Our support, I suppose, Gail, in terms of finances, in terms of our funding, we are supported by an organisation called Social Entrepreneurs Ireland, who have invested in Michelle and I and in Women for Election for 2 years to make our vision real. And they are about bringing about enormous social change in Ireland. And they believe, as we do, that more balanced representation of women and men in political life will lead to better outcomes for everybody, women, men, girls and boys. So they have invested in Women for Election for that reason. We're also supported by a charity called the Joseph Rowntree Charitable Trust in the UK, which supports radical social change projects. And we have a number of grants, smaller grants in Ireland, one from the Community Foundation of Ireland, which is supporting women from community groups to come on our programmes. It's also important to say that the programmes that we run, so we run an Inspire programme, which is a one-day programme to help women take the first step into political life, and an Equip programme, which is a three-day campaign school for women who are actually running for office. Each of those programmes is revenue generating. So there is a cost to come on our programs, which helps us become a sustainable organization. That's where our finances come from.
And how long have they been supporting you?
We're a reasonably new organization. We've been operational for a year, but we have only been funded since last November. So those funding streams have been in place since last November, and they last for 2 years. So our challenge is to continue to generate funding and to develop programs that will make us a sustainable business after that 2 year grant funding runs out.
You just made reference to Inspire. You just recently completed that, and my understanding is that was extremely successful. You also had your deputy leader, Mary Lou McDonald, there to give as one of your speakers. Can you talk about Inspire?
Of course, and it's important to say as well, I suppose, in terms of support, that Women for Election is completely nonpartisan, but we are supported by all of the political parties. So each of the political parties has committed to send a number of women on our programs, and elected women have been incredibly supportive in terms of generating support for us around the country and media opportunities and other things that come with that. Mary Lou McDonald is the deputy leader of the Sinn Féin party, which is an opposition party at present and one of the growing forces in Irish politics. And she came as our keynote speaker to the Inspire programme and spoke very openly and frankly about her experience as an elected woman, winning and losing elections and managing that with a young family. She has two young children, aged 5 and aged 8. And she has been elected both to the European Parliament, which involved travelling to and from Brussels in Belgium and Dublin, and now to the Irish Parliament. And she has also lost elections in Ireland. So that mix of experience was very interesting to our participants because she spoke openly about how difficult that is and how she had to get back up and get her campaign back on track. So Inspire starts off in the morning with a speaker with that real life experience, and that was Mary Lou. In this instance, we'll run Inspire 8 times this year, and that was our first one in Dublin. It then moves into a session on confidence, which is run by Catherine Vaughan, who is a very senior business leadership coach in Ireland. And she walks women through a program which is geared towards identifying their personal strengths and all of the activities that they are already undertaking, the networks that they have, and how those are relevant to politics and how they would be beneficial should they decide to become a candidate. It's a really engaging session, a lot of workshopping with the group. Then we move into our campaign session with Carl Lee, who ran one of the presidential campaigns here last year for a man called Sean Gallagher. And Sean came second in the presidential campaign, and Cathal has a wealth of experience. He walks participants through what is required if they're going to run for office, how they need to get their team organised, their strategy planned out, and their plan in order before they declare, and how to bring that plan through from the selection phase to ultimately to election. And then in the afternoon, we move into a session on communications, which is delivered by two wonderful women. One is a former CEO of a national level radio station, and the other is used to be the advisor to the leader of the Labour Party in Ireland. And they talk to candidates about the media, how to access the media, and how to develop your message and your profile for media and for your communications channels. So candidates leave the day having upped their confidence, engaged in developing their campaign plan and understanding what they need to do to get themselves prepared before kicking off their campaign, and with a deeper understanding of the Irish media and how they can best access it, and a clarity on a framework for their message in advance of declaring their campaign.
This sounds absolutely empowering. And beyond just inspiring, but to be able to leave with actual tools and resources along with connections to help individual women along this path sounds inspiring. And that's what
says on the tin.
And empowering.
Exactly.
Absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. The network, it's worth mentioning the network because I suppose There's 60 women on each of these programs, and they leave the day connected, each woman connected to another amazing group of women. And what really struck us on the first program was the connections that women were making through the day with other women who can help and support them on their political journey. And at the end of the day, women stood up and some said, you know, I came here not sure why I was here, but now I realise why it's my responsibility and obligation to put myself forward for election, because I am part of solving this problem that we have. But others stood up and said, I'm not ready to go forward for election. I'm not comfortable with putting myself on that poster or on that leaflet. But I now see my role. I see how I can be a campaign manager, or I can be an election agent, or I can support this woman sitting beside me, and I'm going to do that. So through the network, there's very many different roles that women can take on. And I think it's very empowering for many of those there to realise, I understand now where I fit in this picture and how I can be part of solving this problem, even if I'm not the candidate.
That's a real good point, because we often think of only winning, and we also only think of being in the elected position. But the truth of it is that losses are, learning how to deal with losses is a part of the political process. And then being able to identify our role as women at all levels of that process, and that all of us do not have to be the candidate. So that's very valuable insight, I think, as well, in terms of empowering women and moving them toward election. It's finding and understanding, and also just embracing the fact that you can serve and have a responsibility to serve at multiple levels and not just strictly as the candidate. Can you talk to us about Women for Election, and how that grew out of Women for Europe?
Sure. So Michelle and I met, my partner, because we're both very pro-European. Ireland is a small country. It's one of 27 member states that make up the European Union. And we are unique because our constitution requires that if there is a change to the terms of our membership of the European Union, Ireland has to ratify that by referendum, which means it's an extremely democratic process. And in 2008, the Irish people were asked to ratify the Lisbon Treaty, which brought it in a series of mechanisms to facilitate, I suppose, the European Union's processes as it had grown from 15 to 27 members. And there was much debate in Ireland as to whether this was a good thing. And Michelle and I felt very strongly that women's voices needed to be present in this debate, because Irish women's lives were changed when we joined the European Union in 1973. In 1973 in Ireland, if you worked in the public service, you had to give up your job when you got married. There was no law around equal pay for equal work. There was no maternity leave.
In 1973?
In 1973.
So we're not talking that long ago.
We're not talking that long ago. So what changed Irish women's lives, and the reason that I am where I am today, and Michelle is also, and so many women of our generation, is because of the laws and the policies that were brought in because of the requirements of the European Union. So Ireland had to sign up to equal pay for equal work. It had to bring in a directive around maternity leave because that was a requirement of Europe. So we set up a campaign called Women for Europe around the second Lisbon Treaty referendum to have that conversation openly with women and to say, look, why are we supporting this treaty? Why is it women's? Why should women's voices be key voices in this discussion? Because of our history in Europe. So our campaign was really based around going around the country and connecting with women's groups in towns and villages and having a conversation about the journey from 1973 to 2008, and talking about women's experiences and why women's voices weren't out there so actively pro-European as they had been in the past. And what was interesting about that campaign was that when we went to those women's groups meetings, and they would be through the Country Women's Association, through the farming networks, through the Women's Council networks, through different community organisations, women were interested in talking about Europe, but they were far more interested in talking about why we didn't have more women putting themselves forward for politics at national level. And so our takeaway from the Women for Europe campaign, which was ultimately successful, Ireland ratified the Lisbon Treaty and women were a huge proportion of the voters in doing that. But what we took away was there's an army of women out there that want to see change in how our national politics looks like. And they have actually asked us in many cases to take that campaign on once we finish with the European campaign, to take on this national campaign. So we decided, Michelle and I, okay, we've built this network around the country. We have these women behind us. Let's try to develop something out of that responds to their need. And that is how we connected in, actually, with the US, because we came across the White House Project. And I know you had Tiffany on. I listened to Tiffany's interview, which was fantastic. We came across the White House Project because we were researching what is happening in other countries. How are other countries helping women to make that step into politics? And we saw the White House Project as a really empowering model that was engaging with women where they were, in communities around the country, and actually working with them to support them to develop the kind of skills that they needed to make the next step. And so a lot of what Women for Election is doing is based on learning from the White House Project. It's been enormously influential in our work.
That's interesting because Tiffany and I, after that conversation, in fact, that's how you and I were connected. It was right after we went off the air. I asked her if she had any counterparts, if the White House Project had any counterparts in other countries that she was in touch with. And she said, I just happened to have received an email from a lady in Ireland that's been following us. And I said, I'd really like to get a roundtable discussion on Sylvia Global with women around the world who are supporting, encouraging, and advocating for women to run for elected office. And that's going to be one of our follow-up episodes, including you. And Tiffany on that in that conversation. So it does make a difference, doesn't it, to reach out and to believe that things are possible at every
Absolutely.
Level. At every level.
Yeah.
You know, one of the, you know, my understandings about the Women for Europe campaign was that you met with over 2,000 women and you hosted 53 events in 26 countries and you distributed 5,000 information packages, you know, that featured local, national, and international media components. So this is not easy work that you are doing, and you don't have a large staff or tremendous resources. You and Michelle have just simply do what so many women do, and that's identified a problem, it's pulled at your heartstring, and then you, I call it strap up the bras.
Yes.
You strap up and get
yes.
up, and you know, tackle. You know, we see where there's a need, and then we dive in to bring whatever parts we can of ourselves to be a solution in solving the problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's it. I do have to correct you on one thing, though, Sylvia or Gail. I would love to say that we had distributed in 26 countries, but in fact, it's 26 counties.
County.
So that's Ireland.
Okay.
That's our country.
Okay.
So that's a big achievement for us because that's our entire country.
Yeah.
And that was our goal, to talk to women in every single county, from Cork to Donegal and across, from Galway right back to Dublin. And we did. And I suppose what's sort of encouraging when you do this work, and the energy you get from it, is that you realize just how many other women see this as a problem too, and it spurs you on.
Yeah.
And even connecting with Tiffany in the US, and I also went to the Women's Campaign School at Yale University last summer, and Michelle is attending this summer, and connecting in there with women from across the US, and indeed other countries globally. We had a woman from Cameroon, a woman from Nicaragua there also, and you realise this isn't just our problem in Ireland, this is something we can work together globally to solve and learn from one another. And it's just so wonderful to be able to draw on that experience and expertise and kind of shared kind of problem-solving approach. It's been excellent for us.
I have a few closing questions, and tell us, why are you drawn to this work? What is in your background? What has been some of your experiences that have led you to be so committed and passionate about this work?
Well, I suppose it's a very ordinary story in one way, which is that I'm 30 years old. I've grown up in Ireland, which is modern, in my opinion. I've had every opportunity. I had a fantastic schooling experience. I have a degree and a master's degree in politics from good universities. I've never, in my heart, I don't feel that I have faced particular barriers. And yet I look at how I'm represented and I see that I'm not, because whatever is happening in my country means that women and voices like mine aren't getting there in political life, and that's where it really, really matters. And I think that we've come so far in terms of education and in terms of progress, yet where the really important decisions are made, women aren't there. And I just find it shocking, and I find it wrong, and I feel like it's our generation's responsibility to change it. And my sister is 18 years old, and she's finishing her schooling this year and going into college. And I spoke to her school recently, her class, and I asked them, had any of them, they're intelligent, bright young women looking forward to college life, had any of them considered politics as a career? And they looked blankly at me, and they asked, why would they consider it? And I explained the rationale of influence and so on. And they told me that why would they consider it? Because they didn't have any role models.
Correct.
And I think that that's our responsibility, that there needs to be women there for younger women to see that this is something that they can do, and that I feel a sense of responsibility around that.
Is politics in Ireland and in the media as ugly as it is here in the United States? You know, someone could look at the political discourse and the way that the media shapes discussions and debates in this current generation and wonder, why in the world would I want to expose myself to that type of behavior and the ugly side of politics? Does it operate the same in Ireland, or are there other characteristics that could cause a young woman to say, why would I want to expose myself to that?
I think, Gail, it is a problem. I don't think it's as bad as it is in the United States, in the sense that there are some elements of people's privacy and personal life that are not exposed to the degree that they are, in my experience, in the US. People would be a little respectful of family life. However, that is actually starting to change. And I think the media in that regard is getting a little bit worse. For women that I've spoken to, and especially young women, when they're at a sort of perhaps slightly more vulnerable period in their lives, in their late teens, they find the kind of analysis of how they look and how they present themselves very off-putting, because female politicians, if they have a hair out of place, there's a comment. Or if they're seen, you know, going for a walk in the park in the morning without makeup, there's a photo. And I think that young women find that off-putting, because they don't want to be put under that magnifying glass, especially when it doesn't matter if they're doing their job.
Yeah, and that's another discussion we'll be coming back to on another episode of Sylvia Global, and it's, you know, the role that our outward appearances plays in our ability, you know, to be effective as leaders, and what helps and what hurts and what frustrates us, you know, as women, because men don't have to... It doesn't get the same type of attention, nor is it elevated to the same degree of importance. Last two questions. Do you love what you do?
I love it. Gail, I can't believe, Michelle and I would say the same thing. We can't believe we're getting the opportunity to do this. It's absolutely amazing. It's my dream. And that is thanks to Social Entrepreneurs Ireland, who funded us when we didn't have any other funding. So they enabled us to make this idea and this vision real. And, you know, we are forever indebted to them because they believed in us. They took a punt on us, as we would say here, which is like a bet. But it is unbelievable to get up in the morning and know that all day long you're just going to be fascinated and engaged and meeting wonderful people and actively taking steps to bring about the kind of change that you feel so passionately about. I still can't believe it's real.
You're making history too. At the same time,
well, we hope
you're
so.
Contributing
we hope
a
major so.
Part. Last question. Actually, last two questions. How can our listeners support you?
Well, I can think of a number of ways. I mean, I suppose one of the really important things to us is to build our connections with the United States. And we're really actively trying to connect in with some Irish Americans who have experience of politics in the US that maybe might like to share some of their expertise or experience back home, and asking them to contact us, and especially Irish American politicians. But there's a couple of very basic ways that that anybody can get involved and support us. And that would be to go on our website, which is www.womenforelection.ie, and sign up for our emails so that we can keep in contact. It's to like us on Facebook if you search Women for Election, and again, keep in touch with what we're doing. To follow us on Twitter, and that's @WomenForElection with the number 4. But really to think about if there are ways that we can learn from people in the US or for US politicians, or build on that really strong Irish American connection, to get in touch with us. They can email us at hello@womenforelection.ie or through our website or Facebook or Twitter, and just start making those connections.
Niamh Gallagher, last question. Will you come back again on Sylvia Global and join us for more conversation and keep us up to date around the world on the work of women in election and moving this agenda forward?
I would be delighted to. I would love that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for being my guest today. You've been listening to SylviaGlobal.com. This conversation is available as a podcast on iTunes. It also can be found on SylviaGlobal.com, along with Women in Elections contact information. Thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful day.